calculated for those periods.
Yesterday, at right after the lunch, somebody, one of the council members, handed me a fortune out of one of the fortune cookies. I should probably save this for, say, tomorrow or Thursday, but I will do it now. Its determination will get you through this. I thought it was fairly appropriate. We'll keep it right here. Couple of just one agenda item. Right included in the 11:15 item, we're going to, at the end of that, we'll get an update on NROC from the Executive Director, John Weber. That will be just a short update. So that's an addition to today's agenda. Usual items, 90 minutes. Cell phones, please, on silence or vibrate or whatever. And now we will jump right into Monkfish. I'm turn it over to Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope your fortune is applicable to Monkfish this morning. Good morning, everyone. As always, behind tab 10 is your Monkfish information. There is a summary of the recent committee meeting, a summary of the recent AP meeting, some correspondence from the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council of Chair Rick Robbins, PDT report on latent effort and Category H permits, and a PowerPoint presentation that Phil is going to give us all in a few minutes. Since the last council meeting, as Pat said yesterday, the agency did publish Framework 7, the revised Northern ACT and associated specs. The AP met to provide additional input on the issues and problems in the fishery to be addressed in Amendment 6. The committee met to review the AP report and the PDT analysis towards development of the goals and objectives for Amendment 6. And we had hoped to have been able to bring you those today, but our anticipated delivery to the council is now the November meeting. The committee also discussed some analysis that indicated a disparity in trip limits for the tail-to-hull fish conversion ratio, and Phil will run you through those details. And the committee also discussed at great length the need for the industry to know up front their individual contribution factors before there could be any meaningful discussion on the development amendment at 6, and voted to propose three different time periods. There's a letter from, as I said, a letter from Rick Robbins, requesting that two members from the MID be added to the committee, and it was advice that they're reforming their own ad hoc committee. And I don't know what I've missed, Phil, but if please fill in and carry on with your PowerPoint. Thank you much. I guess the other what I did forget was there are two action items today that will address. Following public comment and Phil's PowerPoint.
Thank you. Good morning. There we go. Over the course of the year, the advisory panel and the committee developed a list of issues and problems with the monkfish fishery for the purposes of developing a set of goals and objectives. This is the list here. In the discussions, the committee particularly requested that these items be substantiated and fully explained rather than simply a bullet list of items. They include latent effort, lack of continuous supply to processor, wasteful discards, inefficient vessel operation, lack of flexibility, the restrictions on the Category H vessels that fish off of Virginia, North Carolina, full utilization of catch targets and protected species interactions. This is not an abbreviated list. This is actually the list that was forwarded to the committee and further developed by the committee, and they wanted to get more into depth on this. At the June 1st meeting, the committee tasked the plan development team to develop a problem statement based on an analysis of the bullet list of issues. We held a conference call, and members of the plan development team agreed that it could provide analysis, data-based analysis, on four of the items: latent effort, process supply, discards, and the issues with the Category H vessels. But the other issues required a little bit more explanation and input from the advisors and the committee. At the time that the committee tasked the PDT to do this, of course, many members had already their summer work plans and leave plans, et cetera. So I wasn't sure as to the timing of our ability to complete the work. The advisors met on June 19th to further develop the list of issues and provide some more explanation, and that was included in their report to the committee. Over the summer, the PDT was able to develop an analysis of both the latent effort and the Category H vessels. The process of supply item is still in the works, as is the in-depth analysis of the discard situation. For the latent effort analysis, and I would encourage you to read the report because I'm only going to give a summary here. The PDT looked at the fishing years 2007 to 2010, and that includes 2010, where the groundfish fishery embarked on a sector management program. For the purpose of this analysis, we considered latent effort to be days at sea that were allocated to the fishery but not used. When we do the allocation, we look at the recent 2 or 3 years of effort use, days at sea use, and develop the specifications for the next 3 years, days at sea allocation and trip limits, to achieve a catch target. Then the days at sea that we calculate based on the active effort is actually allocated to all the vessels that have limited access permits. So there are going to be many more days allocated than those that are being used. The risk here is that if this allocated but unused days at sea becomes activated, catch targets might be exceeded. That's a short-term problem because the next time we do the specifications, we look at the active vessels, and if there's been an increase, that will have implications for the allocations in the future. What we found is that the rate of days at sea usage during this period has been fairly consistent, including in 2010, where sectors were adopted. And that implies that latent effort has not been activated and hasn't actually increased either. The PDT determined that about half of the allocated effort has a very low probability of being used for a number of reasons. A good portion of those days at sea are allocated to limited access vessels that also hold a scallop limited access permit. The requirement that they have to use a scallop day at sea when they're on a monkfish day, they universally make the decision not to do that because they would rather use their scallop days to target scallops. You can't use a dredge when you're on a monkfish day at sea. So as long as the scallop resource remains healthy, they're making a lot more money just using their days at sea for scalloping and not using a monkfish day. Then there's a group of vessels that are limited access monkfish permits. They get allocated days at sea, but they have no landings of any species at all. These vessels may be on the West Coast. They may be confirmation permit history vessels. But for whatever reason, they are not landing any species in the Northeast. Some vessels that are active fishing vessels only fish in the southern management area. The way the plan allocates the days at sea, all the vessels are treated equally. They all get the same number of days at sea. However, if you are fishing in the southern area, at least in recent years, the number of days at sea you're allowed to use out of that allocation is less than the total. So you have, if you only fish in the southern area, then there's some days at sea that you never use. Those are, and if you haven't gone fishing in the northern area, you're not likely to go there, at least in the near term. And so those days considered to be inactive and with a low probability of becoming activated. Of the remaining allocated days at sea, the second 50%, it's allocated to vessels that have fished for other species. So they are active, but they're not using any monkfish days at sea. And so the chance of them, because they're active and they're fishing, the chance of them actually using is higher than that previous group. 31% of those days are allocated to vessels that used at least one monkfish day, but didn't use all of their days. In fact, only used about half. So of the vessels that actually used a monkfish day at sea, if you added them all together, the amount that's used is about half of what they're allocated. If you took that group and that accounts for about 14% of the days, total days at sea allocation that has the highest probability of being used, 14% of the total, because those vessels are active in the fishery. They're just not using their full allocation of days at sea. And so graphically, if you wanted to look at this, this top sort of purple color is the days at sea that were actually charged to limited access monkfish permits. The circle, of course, is the total number of allocated days at sea. This portion here are the days at sea that were not used by the vessels that use these days here. These three comprise the vessels that have a low probability of using their monkfish days at sea. You've got your scallop vessels here in this kind of green color. You've got the days at sea that were allocated to monkfish vessels with no landings of any species at all in this one. And then this little gray slice here are the days at sea allocated to vessels that fish only in the southern management area. And then this orange group here is the days at sea allocated to vessels that are fishing but haven't used a monkfish day at sea during this period. The next issue that the PDT was able to complete in its analysis of was the Category H permit vessels. For a little bit of background, Category H was established in Amendment 2 to provide limited access permits to a number of vessels that, through a series of circumstances during the initial development of the FMP, did not qualify for a limited access permit. They held some experimental fisheries over the years, and in Amendment 2, the councils agreed to establish a limited access permit category for those vessels, but restricted them to fishing below 38 degrees 40 minutes. Actually, it was lower than that, but it was changed in one of the frameworks. These vessels are further constrained by a series of turtle closures that were established in the early 2000s and also harbor porpoise restrictions. In addition to that, the availability of monkfish in that region is limited to the spring months as the fish migrate up out of the deep water and head northward. And as a group, these seven vessels, there are actually only six active vessels in this group. They use about 50% of their allocated days at sea, but the distribution of those days, some are using closer to, how do I get out of this? Some are using closer to 80% and some are using a quarter. This is a map of the area. I'm sorry that the text is not legible on the screen, but it is in the report. The dark line on the top is the harbor porpoise closure area boundary. The red line right underneath it is the area that they are restricted to fishing south of during this when they have this permit. Then you have the turtle closures are shown in the yellow with the year-round closure at the bottom, and then it moves up as the water, warm water moves in. It's closed in March, April 1st, and April 16th. So as you can see, if you're fishing out of North Carolina or Virginia, you kind of got to move up as the closures come in place. Then you concentrate in this small area. Now, their allocation is based on the Southern Management Area TAC. And initially, you know, there was some concern that uncertainty about how many vessels would be in this and what their impact on the fishery is, which is why the council's established this geographic boundary on the north. But now that the fishery has been in place for a number of years, we've received comments from advisors and a recommendation from the advisors and the committee now to eliminate that line and allow these vessels to just participate as category B or D vessels in terms of their fishing. This is just a graph. There's two graphs in the report. I'm just showing one of them today that shows the distribution, monthly distribution of their landings, monk fishing. You can see it is concentrated April, May, and June, with May, of course, being the biggest month. So now the PDT, as I mentioned earlier, is in the process of doing a detailed analysis of the discards of monkfish. We're looking at the monkfish discards in the monkfish fishery, the discards of other species in the monkfish fishery, and the discards of monkfish in other fisheries when the vessel's not on a day at sea. There are some difficulties here with trying to match up the day at sea database with the landings database, but we're working on that. And in terms of the processor analysis that we would do, one of the social scientists has been conducting a processor survey by telephone to substantiate the details of the issue, the bullet list of processor supply constraints. At the end of August, the committee met and agreed that the Amendment 6 goals and objectives would be based on this list of issue and also to look at them in the northern and southern area separately. The council may recall at the last meeting we had a white paper presentation in consideration of even separating the management of monkfish into two separate FMPs. The councils did not adopt that. They instead wanted to keep it as a single FMP, but they acknowledged that you might have different management regimes in the two areas. They have tasked the PDT to summarize the work that's been done to date and characterize the significance and importance of each of these issues as it relates to each area separately. In order to move the process of Amendment 6 forward, and based on some comments that were received during scoping and subsequent meetings, the committee is requesting that NIMS calculate the individual contribution factor based on the landings history of the vessels for three time periods, and that's contained in the motion, and the, some of the discussion is also included in the summary, meeting summary for the August 31st committee meeting. So the next step for the committee is to develop final recommendations on goals and objectives for Amendment 6. And also, we are now, based on the letter from Rick Robbins, increasing the coordination with the Mid-Atlantic Council. We will are seeking to have some additional seats on the committee, which I believe they've already assigned a couple extra people. And also that we hold some of our meetings in the Mid-Atlantic area to engage the constituents there further. And that ends my presentation. Now, before I field any questions, I just want to add something, and that is in the context of the council's discussion yesterday on measures of performance. And I would say that if we had objective measures of performance for this fishery in place right now, the tasks of characterizing the issues and the problems in the fishery would be much more direct. We would be able to take the criteria for these measures of performance, run them through the data, and say yes or no, we are achieving the goals or achieving the measures of performance, the objectives of the plan, or not. What we're doing now with many of these issues and problems is it's becoming very subjective because we don't have objective criteria for evaluating things like flexibility, efficiency, and those sorts of things. It's a very difficult task to do that, and we're trying, but it's hard to do. Fortunately, and take this opportunity to introduce Tammy Murphy, who is an economist with the Social Sciences branch, who's just been assigned to the PDT. We have actually been operating without an economist for a period of time now, and particularly with regards to catch share measures and Amendment 6, socioeconomic issues are very important. In fact, more important than the biological issues at this point. The stocks are rebuilt. There's no overfishing. There's no biological issues occurring right now. So all of the things that we're trying to wrestle with are socioeconomic. And Tammy is back there. And so we welcome her aboard, and hopefully we will be able to proceed more expeditiously in the next few months. And that's my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Phil. I'm wondering if, before you conclude, you can put some context to the committee's discussion on the triplement disparity before the motion comes up.
Okay. This one is a little arcane. I will try to explain it to you in the simplest terms that I can. When we do the calculation of the specifications with the trip limits are expressed in terms of tail weight. And then we have a whole fish conversion. So if a vessel is not landing tails, if the trip limit is 550 pounds, but a vessel is landing whole fish, we have a poundage based on a conversion factor that's equivalent to that tail weight. We've been using 3.32, which is actually the tail to whole fish live weight conversion up until Amendment 5. While we did the analysis of the specifications for the current 3-year period, what we noticed was there were two little spikes in the trip limit, and one of them was around 610 instead of 550. We figured there's something going on, and as we delved into it a little further, it turns out that vessels landing are landing fish that are gutted with their heads on, and then those are reported by the dealer as whole fish, when in fact they're not. And so when we do the conversions up for everything up to live weight, we end up with this extra spike above, because we're basically taking the gutted fish that was calculated 3.32 and adding 14% to it, so you get up, you come up with a higher number. But you shouldn't be doing that. So the agency adopted a technical correction that put the tail weight equivalent at 2.94 to gutted fish. And that is what the trip limit is if you're not landing tails, but you're landing whole fish. The effect of that is that the weight of your whole fish without the guts is reduced by 14%. Effectively a trip limit cut for those vessels, because they've been accustomed to landing 3.32 times the tail weight trip limit. Now they have 2.94. Have I confused everybody so far? Okay. So the committee discussed this issue based on some comments by people, and has decided to request that the agency see if they can do some sort of mitigation through any kind of technical correction. And that's one of the motions that's going to be before you later this morning.
Any of the council members have questions for Phil or Terry on this? Jim.
Phil, on your pie-shaped chart that showed used, unused days.
Yes.
Did you look at a comparison of used, unused before 2010? In other words, has something changed?
It hasn't changed, really. It's been consistent. I just used 1 year because it's simpler, but it really has been consistent throughout the period.
May I follow up? And the reason I ask that question is I note that at one of the meetings that the monkfish buyers were alluding to the fact that since we went to cat shares, there was less days being used, but you're not seeing that. And I'm wondering why they're trying to say that, and they may be correct, I don't know that, but they're trying to say that the supply stream has been interrupted, but if we're using the same number of days.
Proportion of days is the same. Portion of days being used. The numbers actually have declined from 2007. That particular issue, I am waiting to see the final results, because we've only heard from one or two of the processors, and we did receive some comments at the committee from one who represents three processors, an attorney who represents three processors. But be that as it may, I'm not sure why that's happening. So, you know, there are some allegations, but without actually looking at the flow of the product, certainly the landings have essentially, you know, been about the same for the last few years, up and down a little bit, but it may have moved to different places as well. I have to find that out.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Phil, the description you just provided relative to the change in the conversion factor, that's described in the last paragraph of the report provided by the advisors, I assume.
The advisors report?
The one respectively submitted by Maggie Raymond.
They're the ones, they brought it up.
That's the reference, right? That describes what you just put forward relative to the conversion factors?
Under other issues.
That
yes.
Okay. So with that understood, did the committee or do you have any indication as to whether or not this new conversion method might affect or perhaps has affected our assessment of the situation, that is the nature of the fishery, where it is right now, stock assessment information? Does it have any implications for the, you know, the big picture? Well, instead of just adjusting trip limits.
We did look at the magnitude of the problem, and actually it affects a very small percentage of the total weight and would have a very small effect on the assessment. The problem is that if you look at it from the vessel owner's perspective, for those vessels that are affected, it's a significant problem individually. But in the total amount of fish that's landed, the amount that this weight difference accounted for is very small.
Dave?
Yeah, Phil, from this pie chart, potentially, if you were to allocate fish to all the people in this pie chart, and then you were to allow some method of transfer, wouldn't you be effectively increasing efforts substantially? In other words, a lot of this pie chart is inactive. It's not fishing for monkfish. But they have landings. So if you allocate landings to them and then you say, okay, as an example, you can lease those to somebody that is actively fishing, you know, have you looked at that yet as to how that could potentially increase effort?
This is a reflection of using days at sea and not using days at sea. Monkfish is ubiquitous. It's caught in every fishery. So, for example, the scallop vessels here that are not using their monkfish days at sea, they're still catching monkfish. And many of them are landing, although many of them choose not to even bother for whatever reason. They're too busy cutting scallops. They want to get in. They don't want to deal with the monkfish. Could be product quality issues that they're not keeping the monkfish. But they are catching it. So if we're allocating and we're now managing for total catch, there wouldn't necessarily be a big increase in effort. And besides that, the limit of the allocation, the poundage, is going to be the same. With the exception of the vessels that are not having landings of any species, all of the other ones are landing fish and are allocated effectively through the incidental limits, a portion of those fish. And those fish are accounted for when we do the specifications. We take all the incidental fish off the top from the catch target, and then use the remainder to allocate to the days at sea fishery.
Okay. The other comment I had is I don't see a lot of this as really latent effort. I see it more as stranded effort. It's effort that is stranded by the nature of the permit you have. And
By the what?
It's stranded by the nature of the permit you have. In other words, if you're a scallop boat and you don't want to waste your time with monkfish, even though you've got a permit that allows you to land quite a few of them. It's not, I don't see it as latent effort. I see it as stranded. It's stranded on that permit because it's being used for something else. So I guess I don't see this big latent effort issue. I see it more as stranded effort, and it's an economic issue for these boats. I mean, they're making more money doing something else, so they're not interested in monkfish for whatever reason. Like you said, whether they've gone to the West Coast or they're a scallop boat that's doing quite well on scallops and has no time for monkfish. So I guess I don't see the latent effort issue, at least not clearly at this time.
Anyone else on the council? Paul.
I see one huge problem that doesn't appear to be in the list of problems, and that's that the monkfish plan is probably the most confusing plan we have, with all the different categories of permits and tails and weight and a north stock and a south stock and everything. So it's very, very complicated. So one of the problems is its complication, and a goal would be to simplify it.
Further, Dr. Pierce.
Phil, again, this issue of the recalculation of the tail to whole fish conversion weight, is that something that could be accounted for, could be done through a framework, or does it have to go through the amendment process?
In my opinion, it could be done through the framework process, because basically it would require reallocation of respecification of the days at sea and trip limits to achieve the catch targets.
Okay, but the committee is not recommending that it be done through a framework. They're recommending it be done through some technical amendment. So, but a framework, in your view, would be an appropriate way to do this. Although that would take more time than a technical amendment. Could you clarify that? What takes? Is the technical amendment a simple thing to do, or is it more complicated?
Well, it's very simple for me, because it's basically the agency that does it. And if we were to embark on a framework with the associated environmental assessment and the potential for some other ornaments to be hung on it to deal with short-term problems, that would take time and effort away from consideration of Amendment 6.
Anyone else on the council? Pat?
Yeah. We've looked at this and don't think that it's something that could be done through a technical amendment. So I think we're stuck with a council action. Could not.
Any other council comments, questions? My intention at this point is to go to the audience and ask them for any of their comments on this, and then bring it back to the council for debate and resolution on the two motions that I believe the committee chair is going to put before us. So I'll open it up to the public comment. Yes, sir.
My name is Daniel Bubb. I own the fishing vessel Belinda B, Class C monkfish permit holder. I'd like to address the council as far as moving forward with Amendment 6. I was a multiple boat owner going into catch shares in the ground fishery. I didn't fare out too well. Looking into the monk fishery and going ahead with catch shares, I have a few concerns. My concerns are how the council is going to adapt into hopefully going by lessons learned on the sector system and sector management, and do a lessons learned approach. I am a one fisherman that has been expelled out of being in sectors. I lost a $500,000 boat because of the way the cards fell. I ask the council to please look at individual fishing quotas for the monk fishery. Dealing with the north and south, dealing with up in the north, most of the boats here are in the sectors. I'm forced to have to fish in a common pool. Fishing for monkfish in a common pool, I am using all my multi-species days at sea just to go monkfishing. Since the sector system came together, I have been pushed out of the ground fishery because I cannot get into a sector. So I ask the council to please, putting together Amendment 6 and going through with catch shares and what approach you're going to take, to please look at individual fishing quotas. It seems to have been very successful for the scallopers. It seems to be working with tilefish for individual fishing quotas. And please don't put the monk fishery into sectors. The lessons being learned right now are taking a lot of peoples and crushing families. And monkfish is not overfished, nor is overfishing occurring. So for the council to take the approach and move forward with Amendment 6, please make sure it's right where a small day boat operator like myself, who I have a Class C permit with good history, and the decisions you make are going to decide my fate in the fishery. And I just would like you to look at the individual fishing quotas as an option to go to and not the sector system. Because not being able to participate in the sector system, you'll, besides losing my one leg with the sectors on groundfish, my second leg will be taken off on the monk fishery. And I hope things move forward in the right direction where the directed monkfish boats will turn around and get the quota to use and the Aladdin effort. And, sir, when you said you don't see Aladdin effort, if the monkfish landings for the last few years are coming from most of the directed monkfish boats, when the allocation issue comes up at hand, it should be given to the directed boats. Scallopers are being very successful, and they're having their biggest financial years. So as far as giving a fair portion of the directed fishery, and then the scallopers will start to go for landing monkfish, it will take away from the small day boat operators. And I ask you to please take your time and do this the right way and look at individual fishing quotas.
Thank you.
Excuse me, can you?
There is one question for you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, could you explain just for me, maybe I missed it, how come you couldn't participate in the sector for the groundfish?
Thank you for that question, sir. I came into sectors when they were first opened, and I owned two vessels. Sectors seem to have worked for the Cape Cod Hook Association. Sectors seem to have worked for Sustainable Harvest Sector. I've been a Gloucester fisherman, boat owner for 11 years, employed a lot of people. In Gloucester, we have what you refer to as the Gloucester Preservation Fund, where $10 million is given to buy permits. So, since I was entitled to two shares in the sector system to get fish from the Gloucester Preservation Fund, I was in Gillnet Sector 3. The fishermen in my sector had their eyes set on expelling me out of the sector because that would give them my two shares of Gloucester Preservation Fund fish. So when I went into this first year of sectors, it was a very tough financial time for my wife and I. I had a very small allocation. I went from 330,000 pounds of fish landed the year prior to catch shares to the first year of catch shares being allocated 30,000 pounds. Out of 30,000 pounds, less than 20,000 was codfish. Because the sector system was new and some animosity was coming around in my sector and I was having a tough financial time, I went to the Gloucester Preservation Fund for my fish, so I had some fish to go catch. Members in my sector were not happy that the Gloucester Preservation Fund was working with me and giving me my fish. Because I felt like I was set up and Gloucester Preservation Fund was put into Sector 3, about 70,000 pounds of fish for my vessels to catch. Because my financial difficulties, I was expelled from the sector for $2,000. A $2,000 problem cost me a lot, sir.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the public?
Ted Platts, Monk Fisherman, Newport, Rhode Island. It's been quite a while since we sat down and went over this. I had to refresh myself this morning. Maybe this is more appropriately addressed later with the committee part of the process as we get down the road, but I think the 2005 to 2010 period is too short. I also think it's too recent. I should say recent. I mean, 2000 to 2010 is fine. It includes recent landings. But this fishery went into management in 2000 and was rebuilt in 2008. A time frame like 2005 to 2010 apportions a far more significant amount of the history to people who came into the fishery after those who sacrificed to rebuild it made those sacrifices. For 8 years, we took some pretty draconian cuts to rebuild this fishery, and we rebuilt it pretty quickly. If you have two of the years, 2008, 9, and 10, actually 3 years, go to people and a significant number of people who entered the fishery after it was rebuilt, fished for other things while the rebuilding process was taking place, and I don't begrudge them that, but I think this offers a lot of reward to people who did not have the commitment to this fishery and make the sacrifices to rebuild this stock. I mean, we took a lot of hits, and that's my only comment on that. Maybe I should save it for later, but I think, the ball starts rolling once you review a certain set of years. And I would urge the council to keep in mind that 2000 to 2008 is when we paid our dues and rebuilt this stock, and I think you should keep that in mind when you choose a set of years.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the council. And Terry, Jim?
I have a question. I can't remember. What's the initial qualification period for this, for these permits? In the motion, I see it's initial qualification period, but I just can't remember what those years are.
Microphone.
4 years leading up to February 27th, 1994. So it was 1, 2, 3, and 4. And it was 7,500 pounds or 50,000 pounds during that period. You got an A, C, or a B, D permit.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two motions on behalf of the committee. Despite Pat's counsel a minute ago, the first motion is request that the council send a letter to NIMS asking whether the impact of monkfish tail weight conversion calculation issues can be mitigated through a technical amendment.
This committee motion does not need a second. Comments? Dave Gaethel and Dave Pierce.
Didn't we just hear that the answer to that is already no? So doesn't that kind of rule this motion irrelevant?
Still a committee motion. I put it on the floor.
Dave Pierce.
Well, I know Pat's going to provide an explanation as to why she and her staff have decided that it cannot be done through a technical amendment. I look forward to that explanation, since if we're talking about a new conversion factor, that would seem to indicate that it should be rather easy to do. We're talking about conversion factors. Unless there's a problem with a conversion factor and it's not the right one, I look forward to an explanation as to why this couldn't be a simple adjustment in the plan to account for what seems to be a technical issue.
Phil.
I can help out here. It's actually was a correction for an erroneous conversion that was in the plan before. And if you were to correct it or amend, mitigate for it by trying to increase the trip limit for those vessels that are landing the whole fish, something else has to change. The days at sea allocation would have to change, or the tail weight limit have to change, because you can't just change one back to where it was to make amends for that correction without having to something else to give in the equation, because you got those other variables there.
Any other council comments on this? Terry.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reiterate Phil's comment on the committee's discussion. Was concerned by the committee that if this was to be a frameworkable or another action item, that the tendency of this council and the public would be to overload it with a number of other issues and not a single fix, and it would slow down, if not disrupt, work towards Amendment 6.
Gene, would that as an item be frameworkable, or are there allocative issues in it that might require something more substantial?
You mean adjusting the days at sea or trip limits to account for the change in? No, I think that is frameworkable. The issue here is whether it can be done unilaterally as a technical amendment, and as Pat already explained, as alluded to in earlier discussions, that's a sort of allocative decision on how you're going to do it, how much, what are the impacts, and so forth. That kind of thing is for the council to decide, not to be done unilaterally by the agency. So I think it can be done by a framework. It's up to the council, I guess, to have the backbone not to add on bells and whistles if you want to do this as quickly as possible.
Well, we have the committee motion before us. I think we need to go through the voting process. We can vote it up or down and then figure out if we need to go, in another direction. Further comments on this? I'll call a question. All those in favor, so indicate. That's two. Opposed? Fourteen opposed. Abstentions? One. The motion fails. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to suggest that before we initiate action on a sole purpose framework, that this be remanded back to the Monkfish Committee for further discussion at our next meeting prior to our November Council meeting. And should the committee prioritize this, we can factor it into our priorities discussion at such time.
Without objection, Dr. Pierce.
Just a question. Terry's desired course of action suggests that the matter is not simply one of initiating a framework that would deal with changing the southern management area trip limit from 550 pounds tail weight to 625 pounds tail weight to account for that recent calculation of the tail to hull weight conversion weight. So it's more than that. That Phil mentioned that this was very important to some. Okay, I guess the question then is, if it's important to some, does that warrant moving forward with the framework action? Okay, so all right. Is it more than that? Okay, is it more than just increasing that limit for the southern management area? That would require then further discussion by the Monkfish Committee.
Terry.
I can't answer that question today, which is why I was suggesting that we postpone action until we can have the answers and make a smart, deliberate move rather than initiate an action today that may or may not have the intended results.
Again, without Doug.
Just a comment for the council is we go back to the Monkfish Committee to discuss this, is that, you know, clearly, as I see it, one potential option is to wait until 2013 for such an action and wrap it into the specifications, which are scheduled for 2013. It seems like this is going to, the adjustments is going to be affecting the specifications anyway, so it seems like an appropriate time to do it. But.
Phil?
In response to David's comment, if you increase the trip limit, it's not just the southern areas, in both areas. If you increase the tail weight trip limit, you're going to have to reduce the days. So that's going to raise some conversation. Doug's point is true. If we embarked on a framework, it would take effect likely in 2012, mid-year sometime, maybe May 1st. It would be in effect for 2 years, and in the middle of that, we're going to start the specs process for the next three-year period, barring any Amendment 6 activity, but simply as the things are now. So it would change things for about 2 years.
Again, to the council, it was without objection, remanding it to the committee for further analysis on this. Is there any objection? Seeing none, we will do that, and I believe you have a second motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a second motion. I hope we don't need your fortune cookie for this one. A motion on behalf of the committee to request that the council send a letter to NIMS requesting that they calculate individual contribution factors, PSCs, ITQs, or other, based on landing history for three time periods for each area. The initial permit qualification period, 2000 to 2010, and 2005 to 2010, and that these be sent to permit holders and identify the proportion of the landings by management area and northern and the southern areas used in the calculations for each vessel, and further that the agency also provide a summary to the council.
Committee motion does not require a second. Discussion. Tom, then Dr. Pierce.
Terry, not being at that committee meeting, could you explain or sort of describe the conversation around the three qualification periods that were chosen and why they were deemed sort of more likely to move forward as others?
Sure. The committee wanted to give to the industry a wide range of alternatives, one that reflects the most recent history of the fishery, one that reflects a long time period of history, and given that we've already gone through a qualification period back at the beginning of the issuance of the different permit categories, using that as a third option.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Terry, regarding 2010, I see in the summary of the committee meeting that because Amendment 6 may not be in effect for at least 1 to 2 years, then we should use the most recent year, 2010. However, I thought I read someplace in the Monkfish documents that in 2010, some number, I'm not sure how many, but some number of groundfish fishermen had to lease away all their groundfish allocation, I assume because the allocation was so small, and therefore they weren't able to fish for monkfish. I think that's what I read. So if that indeed is the case, by including 2010, it would seem that we actually include a year when fishermen with low allocations of groundfish found themselves in a difficult situation. They leased it away, thus they could not fish on monkfish. So 2010 might be an inappropriate year to include in the mix. I understand the reason for it being in there, according to the committee's understanding, but I feel, without a better explanation, I feel uncomfortable using 2010. So am I correct, first of all, in my statement regarding what happened to some number of groundfish fishermen and the fact that they lost out on monkfish because of their leasing away their groundfish allocation?
Yes. As you read through the committee minutes, there was the initial motion was through 2008, and there was a significant amount of audience and committee discussion resulting in the amendment to 2010 to reflect the most recent years. And this is not a binding number, but it's a guideline. And the committee felt very strongly that the industry needed to know the currency that we're going to be operating under before any meaningful discussion could happen towards the development of any catch share program.
Paul Howard, then Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to caution the council a little bit that everything I've read about catch shares and the controversial nature of it talks about, you know, whether it's the national policy or the MRAG report or the EDF publication. Everything that's been sent to you says that the very first thing you should do is have detailed goals and objectives and not jump to throwing up allocation measures right away. We have to, you know, follow a process, and already we're going to argue about these periods for allocation. And I just caution that we should look at those documents, review them, and, you know, follow those guidelines. And the first thing is detailed goals and objectives. Which one of these, or are there others that would meet the goal and objective that you have for diversity or economic viability or simplification? There's just any number of goals or objectives that these three periods might not meet. And I also caution you that what if so the purpose of sending them out is to gauge whether you like it or not, and if half the people don't like those qualification periods, you know, how are you going to know that? And is that the goal of throwing out qualification periods initially to gauge the interest in catch shares? We've already done that, you know, in scoping. So I just caution that we're not following a process that is detailed in all the publications.
Pat?
Yeah, so I'd like to amplify on those comments. This is premature. I mean, the committee hasn't even decided what they are trying to do and how they might try to do that. This is just going to be confusing to everybody. And we're going to go through several iterations just looking at different numbers while the committee tries to figure out what they want to do. This is really putting the cart before the horse. I think it's a big mistake.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share some of those reservations in looking at the three identified time periods, because I do think it will lead to a lot of confusion within the industry as they receive those letters. One thing, as you know, as I was involved in some of the meetings in an advisory panel role, one thing that we were consistently hearing is that people wanted information so that they could begin to figure out, wanted their landings information so that they could begin to figure out what sort of allocation, if it went, what sort of period would be best for them. So I think we need to be sensitive to that in terms of getting as much information to permit holders as possible in a way that doesn't inappropriately suggest that we're further on in the allocation or the time period decision as we actually are. So I think those are things that we have to weigh.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Having been on the committee and engaged in the discussion that led up to this motion, it was my perception that this was put out there as a way to allow people to make an informed decision depending on how the Monkfish plan proceeded. We seem to be hung up on the line, north-south area. There was an informal discussion about not having a line and allowing people to decide whether they wanted to stick with days at sea or catch shares, because the people in both areas, north and south, that are on both either side of the issue. And in order to make an informed decision of what they were going to choose, they would have to have something to look at, because otherwise they really wouldn't know what they were going to have. I mean, if I had a permit right now, I really wouldn't know how many pounds I would have on it, and it would be tough to make a decision in the eventuality that a no-line scenario came out and people were allowed to choose. It didn't make it into a motion at this point because there really wasn't a lot of data to base it on, because we didn't know how many people or what kind of allocation they would get, so it would be hard for people to decide. And so I think in my perception was this is where this motion started. Thank you.
Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Paul Howard's comments were right on, that this is not the time to lay out some or throw out some straw man allocation windows. I understand that there will be some in industry who want to start looking at some information, but all of these initial cuts are going to be challenged for the mentions reasons like what Dr. Pierce mentioned. Yeah, the tail end being the sector year, why 2005 was an appropriate cut point, would an initial permit years have anything to do with the modern fishery. They're all going to trigger a whole bunch of discussions and internal arguments that don't need to happen right now. So I don't think it's the time to do this. Thanks.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Somewhat sensitive to all the comments that are being made, and I'm wondering if a vessel owner were to make a request for this information through 2010 by management area, is that available to them? Yes, that information is available to them, but it is on a sort of first-come, first-served basis. There's a queue. But anyone at any time can request their landings data. This is a lot more complicated than that, though. It's not just the vessel's landings data. It also has to do with, as the permit was transferred over the years, the who retained the history for certain periods of time. It's a constantly changing scenario. Any individual can certainly request that information until you know how it's going to be used. The information is not very helpful to them, though. The fish online is available to them. They can request their permit history or their landings history or both. At any time, we're constantly filling those kinds of requests. That's if people think that's would be helpful to them, they certainly can do that.
Doug Grout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a member of the Monkfish Committee, and trying to deal with some of the lessons learned from our experience with groundfish, I thought this was important to get this kind of information out to our fishermen, but I appreciate the wise counsel of our executive director and the regional administrator, because you're right, we don't have goals and objectives, and we haven't even finalized the problem statement. So in reflection upon this, I think it would be wise for the committee to hold on to this this motion to a later date once we have developed our goals and objectives and problem statements, so that the fishermen can have a better idea where we're going with this.
Mary Beth, did you have a follow-up question? Did I jump to Doug too quickly?
Yes, thank you. Just a real quick one. I had heard that some people, if you request your vessel history, that you only get it through like 2006 or 7, and that it wasn't available through 2010. I don't know if that's an issue now or maybe it was in the past.
I don't think it's ever been an issue.
Jim Odlin.
Yeah, my comment was going to be similar to Pat's. You can get your landing history, but it's not going to do you any good because you don't know how it measures up against everybody else. So it's really a waste of energy and a waste of effort on, other than to make sure that it's accurate. It doesn't tell you anything when you're talking about this kind of in this context. So
Dave Gator.
Yeah, I see some merit to some of this, and what I don't see merit to is the time periods. The time periods are arbitrary. You know, I think it would be a good idea to let, you know, to have people get their landing's history so they can start verifying it for accuracy. And the way to do that is to send it out to everybody. And then if people want to correct it, they can correct it. This process is going to go on for a couple of years. The sooner we start the process of verifying the accuracy of the landings, the less issues we'll have of the groundfish nature, where people had to wait a year after the plan was in effect to get their corrections. So I could see modifying this motion to say something to the, for example, to go from the time period of the initial permit qualification to 2010 and provide people with their landings and pounds for that entire period so they can start verifying the accuracy of them. And, you don't have this issue of the time periods, which are immediately going to create constituencies to start arguing for the time periods. And you'd basically just be saying that, you know, here's your landings during this period. We may, at some time in the future here, perhaps the relatively near future, pick some period from this time period to determine catch history for monkfish. I think that's the way forward. I think if you put these time periods out here now, you are putting the cart in front of the horse, and you're gonna immediately create turmoil where you haven't got that far yet.
Pat, did you?
Just to that point, I would argue that it's still premature. Your landings history is not what's important. It's the permit history, and it's still going to depend on how the council decides to treat that permit history. I completely agree that we need to allow more time. We didn't have the time under groundfish to allow for the correction. We absolutely have to allow for that in the future. But I don't think it makes sense until you have a set of alternatives you're specifically looking at.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say I agree thoroughly, completely, with what Doug Rout said, and I think that the words of both Paul and Pat were spot on. To add just a little bit to what Paul said, there is a lot of misconception out there on just what the catch share policy is or isn't, what they will or won't do. But I think that one of the things that I never hear in any of this discussion, and with all the media stuff that's always so completely wrong, is that NOAA has a catch share policy. It's easily accessed. I just brought it up on the computer in about 20 seconds, and I had to navigate to find it. It's something that that answers most of the questions and criticisms that people have of catch shares. The policy is clearly stated, and as I said, everything I read about it in the press is completely wrong. It's worthwhile to start from that point. To look at the actual policy and what catch shares can and can't do. Thank you.
Further council comment? Erling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, to be short. This motion, as I remember being a member of the committee, was generated mainly by concerns from fishermen in the Mid-Atlantic. We're concerned about what their future would look like under a catch share system. And I think that's what we have here. And that's what I hear at home. So thank you.
Tom.
I'm sensitive to a lot of the concerns that people have talked about and Pat's thoughts on the relevance and usefulness of getting landings history. I actually think that that's probably the appropriate next step. I know from the conversations at the advisory panel, people have gotten hung down because they don't feel, even though there might be a process to go out and seek that information, they don't feel like they have the landings history in front of them. And I do think that that's going to inform both individuals in terms of what plans or options they ultimately support and the council itself. So I guess with that in mind, I'd offer a motion to substitute I move that the council send a letter to NIMS requesting that they send the complete landings history, beginning with the initial qualification period and through fishing year 2010, for each area to every monkfish permit holder. The council also requests that the agency provide a summary report of this information to the full council.
Is there a second? Mark? Second is Mark Alexander. Mark?
I agree with this, and I also think that they not only need to be provided with their landings history for each permit, but they also need to be provided with the total landings by management area, too, so they can use that information then to determine where they stand in relation to everyone else.
Pat?
So all my comments, previous comments, apply as well to this situation. It's still premature. It's still going to be confusing to people. It's not the landings history. We can't supply the landings history because that doesn't make sense. It's the permit history. And not everybody has access to their previous permit history because of confidentiality issues. This is huge. It's not just, you know, run in a little bit of data and sending it out. It's huge. You know, a vessel may have changed hands several times over the years. Sometimes the permit is kept. Sometimes the permit history is kept. Sometimes the permit history transfers with it. It's very, very hard to track over time. And as I said, they don't always have access. The current owner doesn't always have access to the previous information. So until you have a sense of where you're going and why, then I just don't see the point of sort of blasting people with information that's not just not useful, but could be misleading as well, because it's not necessarily the information that would be used in a qualification situation.
Tom and then Jim.
I guess I'm a little confused because I thought we just talked about how everyone upon request could access their landings history. And if that's the case, then some of what we've heard, whether it's through the multi-species sector discussions in the sort of the aftermath of those decisions or in our discussion so far with the monkfish amendment, is that there are people in the industry that don't feel like everybody's on this a level playing field in terms of information. So rather than request that the entire industry, each individual, make that request themselves, I think we could make that for them. And I think the council could also benefit from that information. So as I see it, if it's possible for an individual to make this landings history request and get that information for themselves, then to put everybody on equal footing, it makes sense that we'd send that information out.
Jim.
Yeah, I'm opposed to this motion. I agree with Pat. I think we'd be using resources for no end. I mean, there's no, it's big. There's people in there that probably don't even care to have their history. They just don't care. They're gone. They're latent people, and we're gonna require them. We're gonna require the service to give data to people that are gone. So that's my rationale for being opposed to this motion. It's a waste of resources, I believe.
Sally?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern I have here is what Pat just articulated again, and that is, while this information is useful, it is partial information and therefore could be perceived as could be misleading to people in terms of what their expectation is if they don't have the whole history of the permit. So I'm going to oppose this right now. I think we need to have a clearer picture of the direction that this fishery is going to go. Otherwise, we're going to get hung up on information, and not only that, partial information. Thank you.
Anyone want to speak in favor of this?
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I think the industry needs this information. Now, whether it's landings history or permit history, that's a nuance I'm not quite clear on. I mean, maybe we should modify this to say permit history, and maybe that'll solve some of the problems. But people need the information in order to make decisions about whether or not they want to proceed forward with a monkfish amendment. And you know, I don't want to get into the situation we were in with groundfish, where we're making decisions, where the industry is largely making decisions on theoretical concepts without hard numbers in their hand. So I do think this is the first step to me. Until you have this, you can't proceed any further. It's not the last step, and that was what happened in groundfish, and I think that's why there's so much lingering hostility about Amendment 16, is that people could not make an informed decision because they didn't have the information they needed to understand what was going on.
Mary Beth.
I was just wondering where there's so many issues that have come up with this particular motion and having the agency devote a lot of resources to this, if Pat would think it may be appropriate to send a permit holder letter explaining to fishermen how they request their permit history. It does seem like it is the responsibility of the vessel owner to do that at some point, going into an amendment like this. And it will allow them to see, issues. Well, I bought the vessel in this year. Clearly the agency can't give me the information. It kind of gives them a heads up. It's not providing a full picture, but it might be a way that would be a little bit more realistic.
Anyone want to speak for the motion? When we run out of fours, we're going to go to the vote. Mark?
I just have a question for Pat. How far back in time is the landings information available on Fish Online?
Well, it goes back to 94, but the more recent information is considered much better than the earlier information, and between 94 and 2006, we are less comfortable with it, certainly. And certainly before 1994, we're not comfortable. It was voluntary before 1994.
Now, that's largely composed of the dealer reporting and not the VTRs? Or is it the VTRs?
Both mandatory dealer reporting and VTRs were implemented in multi-species in 1994 and in scallops in 1994. They came in later for other fisheries.
Right, but which is available in Fish Online, the VTRs or the dealer? Or
both? Oh, on Fish Online? Yeah. I'm sorry. I thought you were asking how the data in general. Do you know? Did you find out? Yeah, sorry. I don't recall how far back we went on Fish Online.
I think what really got the committee going is sort of a chicken and an egg thing. We haven't decided that catch shares in whatever form will be a desired option in Amendment 6, but we don't know until we talk about it, and the industry is not going to have a good opinion of which way they want to go without an idea of what their history is. So, and given some of the difficulties with the data that you just outlined, the 94 to 2006 being, sort of may have some problems with it. I think that we really need the time to sort some of these data issues out and let people look at their data and make corrections where they can. But people really need to know kind of where they stand for this whole process to move forward. So.
One more try. But they're not going to know where they stand until they know they have some idea where the council's going to go. And so until you have some clear picture about where the council is at least considering going and what the alternatives might look like and how allocations might be determined, the information is not going to mean anything to them. Yes, they could do some data corrections, but they're not going to be able to put that information in context. And that information is going to change between the time they get it and the time the council makes decisions. And so we're going to have two sets of information out there, potentially. I really think it's just going to cause so much confusion. I think the best approach is for the council to make some decisions about where they think this is headed, get some industry input into it, and then we talk about putting the information out there for the public to be able to make informed decisions about whether it makes sense to move forward or not.
Paul. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Pat, quick question to maybe alleviate some of the fears or concerns. At a certain point when the council does look at allocation and accumulation limits and decides on, say, five different allocation criteria, before the council votes and goes out to public hearing, wouldn't the industry have an idea of what those five different alternatives mean to them?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting. When you have the alternatives, then I think it's possible to provide information that would be helpful to them.
In favor of the Terry?
I'm not in favor.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, the committee, the AP, and the industry have struggled to move ahead with the council's priority of cut shares in Amendment 6. And it's, you know, my sense that the previous motion really reflect the committee's interest to focus the discussion. I mean, we've, you know, a lot of impatience, a lot of concern about the coordination of monkfish management with groundfish sector management. This motion here, to me, doesn't address the issues as well as the previous one, and per council, they're probably both premature. It's likely we're going to come back with the same type of motion sometime in the near future. We'll most likely have, you know, hard goals and objectives for the council to review at the November meeting. We'll be resetting the priorities again. I don't know what we can do. I mean, Erlen's point was well made. We've had a tremendous amount of comments from the Mid-Atlantic. They just don't know what the currency is. There's a lot of concern about what catch shares will mean to that directed fishery. On the opposite side, we have the mixed trawl fishery here in New England that really would like to have some sort of catch share program implemented to complement the sector management. So somehow we've got to get the information out to the industry of what this means to them. And a lot of the comments we received in scoping were, well, I don't know whether I can support this or not because I don't know what it means to me. And you know, maybe today is too early, but, you know, waiting until we have a fully baked plan to go out to the industry with some type of scenario of history of time periods is too late.
Gene.
Yeah, one thing that's not clear in the motion, is this meant to include, is this landing's history of the permit holder or of the vessel?
Like Dave Gaethel, I guess I was not specific or specific enough in my thinking on that term there. And based on Pat's comments, if the permit history is more available and more accessible and more pertinent, then it would be the permit history.
Pat?
Yeah, it's more pertinent, it's not more available because of confidentiality issues.
Right. Sorry, you know, pardon my newness, but if it's available for an individual to request, it's not available for the council to request that we send it to that individual who owns that? I don't understand the confidentiality problem there.
Yeah, I mean, the permit holder is allowed to get landing's history while he's owned the vessel and the permit. However, you know, that may not reflect what he's entitled to in terms of landing's history, if he can go back and procure history from prior vessels, or if there were agreements and buy and sell agreements and all that kind of thing. It also depends on whether you allow permit splitting or not. I mean, there's a lot of issues here that are not going to be, if you provide data based on the current permit holder's personal history, is not necessarily going to reflect anything in terms of what he might end up with under an amendment for this. So, I mean, it just adds to this problem that there's going to be misinformation or misinterpreted information and confusion about what really a current vessel owner permit holder is entitled to with respect to any future allocation to him or her.
I'm going to call the question at this point. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Five in favor, opposed. Twelve. Abstention. None. 5-12-0. The motion fails. We're back on the main motion. Jim.
Yeah, I'm going to offer a motion to table the committee motion until the Monkfish Committee has developed goals and objectives and a problem statement that has been accepted by the full council.
Is there a second to that?
Second.
Mark Gibson. It's a non-debatable.
So it'll come back once this is accomplished. That's the time, sir.
Yeah, but I think you can postpone for the current meeting. If you motion to table for some indefinite time in the future, I think it's just a motion to table.
It's tabled until...
But it's not tabled to a specific meeting, either this meeting or the next meeting. I think that's the problem. You're giving your thoughts on when you think it should come back, but it's...
We'll perfect the motion to be tabled until the November meeting.
Is that all right for the second?
And the intent of the tabling until the November meeting is so that the Monkfish Committee can develop its goals and objectives and problem statement.
It's non-debatable. Rodney, do you have a process question on this?
No, I have a question for Pat.
I think what we're going to do is go ahead and vote on this, and then I'll come back and you can ask a question. Doug, process question?
It's a point of order, and I brought this up earlier at the last meeting, is that a motion to table is something that is tabled to some time in this particular meeting. A motion to postpone can go beyond a meeting, and I think I talked with Gene about this at the last meeting, and I think he concurred with me that it is properly a motion to postpone to a time certain outside of the meeting. And if you can check your Robert's Rules of Order, Gene, I think that's the proper statement, the proper term. But thank you, Doug. Jim.
Yeah, perfect the motion to postpone the motion until the November meeting.
Just to be correct, we're seeing if the postponing is debatable or not. Thank you.
The comment is that don't believe it's debatable as to substance. It is in terms of process or point of order. I call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate.
Opposed. 2 opposed.
15-2-0. The motion passes. Terry, do you have anything else?
That concludes committee's business.
Mark.
Now, I think it would be helpful between now and the next meeting that we could get a statement from the service as to what actually they think they could provide, which would be meaningful to current permit holders. Like Tom, I'm struggling with the nuances of the confidentiality of who can see what as a permit has moved through a series of ownerships and transfers. So maybe there could be some statement provided to us at the November meeting as to what would be meaningful for industry for planning purposes, yet wouldn't just be a work exercise for the service. Thanks.
Rodney, did...
Yeah, that was the intent of what I wanted to ask Pat. If there was some way we could just provide the permit holders with their current allocation, whatever it's going to be, and if they were able to track their permit back and get it from the previous owner, that would be a bonus, that wouldn't affect everybody else. So, but I think a lot of people just dig into the sand because they don't know what they're going to get, the piece of the pie they're going to get. But I think it would be clear up front as if they had what their actual fishing was and their allocation was, that would help move the process. Basically the same thing.
Herbeth, did you have something?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to my thought before about the permit holder letter, and that maybe if you all are able to come back to explain to the council some of the nuances that I think people who have gone through the process understand, about confidentiality, releases from previous owners, getting a full history. And it seemed like listening to people in Groundfish, it was kind of iterative back and forth. It's not just simply a matter of, you know, sending it off. You send off your request, you get the information back. There's this process that often has to go on with the agency to clarify all these things. And maybe in November, if we have that discussion, we could think in terms of, you know, sending out a permit holder letter that explains all of this to people. This is what you need to do. These are the issues you're going to, you know, likely encounter, and start it from that perspective. And then, you know, people who are, you know, participants in the fishery are much more likely to make the request versus having the agency run through an exercise, as Jimmy said, to people who really aren't active and, you know, it's not really relevant to them any longer. But it seems like, you know, we could talk about that in November.
Terry?
Yeah, actually, I'd like to request that this information be made available for the next committee meeting so we can have a more informed discussion, particularly because we're going to be in the Mid-Atlantic somewhere, and a number of the folks from there are the ones that are asking a lot of the questions.
Thank you. We'll take a 10-minute break.
Excuse me, Rip. I just have one comment I'd like the council to keep in mind. It's a very important consideration because we've now transitioned to managing for total catch. And in the context of this discussion where individuals are going to get their landings history and maybe they'll individually apply it to the catch target to convert it to pounds to say, okay, I'm going to get, you know, 0.1% or 1% of the total catch, and this is how many pounds I can expect to have. We now have to consider discards, and that keeps getting lost in the conversation. We're all focused on landings, but in fact we're managing total catch. And the range of discards by fishery, by vessel type and gear type and time and area is rather wide, and therefore if you were to apply a gross discard number, it might not be appropriate for individuals. So if they get this information, it's going to be harder for them to really go through the full process of determining how many pounds of monkfish that value is going to equate to.
And we always got to keep in mind we're managing total catch now. We're not just focused on landings anymore.
Okay, now we'll take a 10-minute break. Back at 10 minutes up.